This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
This is another podcast of Worldwide Wave, the international LGBT news and current affairs show, every week on Australia's first LGBT radio station, Joy 94.9.
Jordan, thank you for coming along, finding time to actually talk to us virtually from Scotland. Maybe you could start off by telling us about Thai Campaign and why did you start it in the first place?
Yeah, so Thai Campaign, also known as Time for Inclusive Education. Thai is a charity now which works exclusively on LGBT and equalities education in schools, and we come at that from quite a specific angle, which I'm sure we'll talk about. But Thai began in 2015 as a grassroots campaign, and it was when Liam and I met each other during the Scottish independence referendum and had been, you know, very kind of politically involved for the first time. And to be totally honest, Thai was kind of just born out of conversations. I'm gay myself, Liam's not, and we, just as we were becoming friends, we were just kind of having discussions about, you know, my experience at school, like generations of LGBT people before me. I experienced homophobic bullying at school, and there was lots of homophobic language at school. I entered Scottish education the year that Section 28 was repealed in Scotland. So Section 28 was a law which was in effect in the UK, which to all intents and purposes effectively banned the discussion of gay and lesbian relationships and lives within schools across the country. So that was in place for about 12 years from the late 1980s to the early 2000s in Scotland. And it was the year 2000 that I entered school, that I entered education. And that, for me, you know, I've often said before that Section 28 may well have, you know, not like have been in place, because my whole entire experience at school was just characterised by a complete exclusion of LGBT issues. There was a big culture of silence around it. And when Liam and I met in 2014, like those were the kind of conversations that we had.
Yes, I was going to say welcome, Liam. Jordan, I just wanted to pick up there. I mean, it's a big step to go from, hey, I went through this in school, to, my gosh, I'm going to create this project that's going to change things for generations to come. Not everybody can do that. What inspired you and Liam as well? What inspired you both to actually go, hang on, we've got to make a change here?
Well, Liam, do you want to maybe pick this one up?
It's a difficult question to answer, to be honest, because I remember, and I know Jordan feels the same way about this, that we were both active in the independence referendum, and we were both pro-yes, both pro a new, better, different, progressive Scotland. And for some reason, I've asked myself this question a number of times, and for some reason, I know that I walked away from that campaign with confidence that a defeat shouldn't leave you with, if you get what I mean. I felt as if we were on the brink of a social revolution in Scotland whereby we're going to build a brave new world. And for some reason, that feeling of almost being there really inspired me and made me feel that for the first time in my life, at 36 then, for the first time in my life, I felt that the ordinary people like me and Jordan could go and do extraordinary things. And that confidence was really, that was the tailwind that really, that made us believe that we could go and we could make dramatic changes with Scottish education and revolutionise young people's lives. And I started that revolution inside this house here with the way I bring up my little girl, who was 3 then, she's now 9. And it's a very, very good question, because we were to put it in a Scottish context, we were cheeky buggers because we really did go and this is two guys who had no idea what they were doing, no idea how you should structure your own campaign, actually no idea of what you needed, you know, the tools. And when I say the tools, I mean the finance. We had a meeting with activists a lot older than us, people had been involved in political campaigning for many years in Glasgow before we launched the campaign. And this person sat across the table and said to me, where are you going to get the finance for the campaign? And I said to them, what do you mean? And they says, well, you need money for printing, for travel, for accommodation. You know, this is a campaign. You're looking to change Scottish education. It's not easy to do. And saying, we don't need money. We don't need money. We're just going to go and do it. And we're going to go and we're going to win. And we literally went and we won and we delivered LGBT inclusive education. Well, it's not quite finished yet, but it's close. But we delivered a world-leading policy. And we literally done that on hundreds of pounds, not thousands, hundreds of pounds, because we were dynamic, we were smart, and we didn't have money. Simply, we didn't. We couldn't spend money we didn't have. So I don't know where that belief and the drive and the passion came from, but it was there. And I don't know. Myself and Jordan have spoke about it at length, and over the last number of years, we feel as if, and we felt it at the time, there was a kind of magnetism, an electricity between me and him, our personalities, and we felt as if we were put together to do something, to go and to do something special, and I think we did that. So that's a long-winded way to really give you an answer, to be honest.
And I think, as Liam says, like, it's in terms of why the passion and the drive was there, it was the fact that it was there that led us from, you know, sitting on the sofa in Liam's living room and just talking about some of the issues that I'd experienced at school with homophobic bullying and the prevalence of homophobic language in schools and the experiences of LGBT young people, which range from, you know, persistent everyday bullying to, you know, more serious consequences of that bullying to a complete, you know, general inability to reach self-acceptance from a younger age because LGBT young people can't see themselves reflected in their learning. They can't, you know, they don't learn anything about who they are. They don't learn anything about their community. They learn nothing about their history. And Ty really did just come from those organic conversations. Like, I remember sitting on Liam's sofa and talking to him about my experiences. Like, when I was younger, in early high school, you know, around the age of 12, like I was experiencing bullying. I was struggling to accept that I was gay, and you know that led me down just kind of different dark paths in terms of what solutions that I thought that I had to this, you know, perceived problem. And Liam had said to me before, you know, like, what would have made that better for you? What would have made you feel more self-confident? What would have made you, you know, feel better at school? And I remember saying to him, like, if I had just learned about other LGBT people, you know, like, if I'd learned about some of the history of the community, if I had learned about some of the people that have come before me, people like Alan Turing, some of the, you know, the big LGBT icons throughout history, if I'd just learned about one of those people, then I would have known that I wasn't the only person that had felt this way, and that actually there had been people who had come before me who were part of the LGBT community and had gone on to change the world and achieve amazing things. And that was just something that I felt, you know, like I just thought that was impossible. Homophobia was so pervasive at my school that I genuinely, you know, thought that being gay was the worst thing in the world, and it was going to just mean a life of, you know, social isolation and bullying, and I just couldn't see any positives to it. And that's what I struggled so much with. And when we were having those conversations in 2014 on Liam's sofa, sometimes with a bottle of gin or a bottle of wine, it really did just organically then move into, okay, so what do we do about it? And I remember when I was at school, I used to watch the It Gets Better videos, maybe when I was about 14 or 15. And I remember one night showing Liam some of those old original It Gets Better videos, you know, the ones with Lady Gaga and Cher and whoever else. And I remember Liam saying, like, these are good videos. It's the, you know, they obviously meant a lot to me, and they have an impact on other young people. But that whole idea that we have to say to LGBT young people in school, don't worry, it gets better eventually, just wait, hold tight. Liam had said, you know, that's wrong. Like, we should be making things better for young people now. We shouldn't be saying to them, you know, hold tight, that like eventually things will improve. We should be doing whatever it is we need to do to make things better for them, so that, you know, tomorrow's generation's LGBT young people don't continue to have the experiences that, you know, so many of us had before. And that's all, the truth as to where Ty came from. It was a conversation, about a passion, and I think also just a realisation that, you know, it's been a long time. We're in 2015. No one else has done this. No one else is, you know, making any real, you know, effort to try and do anything about this from a national level. You know, if we don't do it, then who will?
When you got to the point where the Scottish Government actually said yes, how did that make you feel? What was going through your mind?
Nothing. Me and Jordan are disgustingly pragmatic. Disgustingly pragmatic. And even when we sat in the chamber in the Scottish Parliament and the Education Secretary, John Swinney, made the announcement to the world that this was happening, me and him were 100% focused on what had to happen next, because speeches in Parliament, commitments are not enough. We have to deliver on the back of the commitments. And what also was going on at the same time is that me and Jordan are, we think, unique in the context that, you know, most campaigners take an issue to the decision makers, deliver, you know, take things to speak truth to power and inform people of what has to change. But most often, the people at the core of that drive will then take a back seat and leave the legislators, the experts, etc., to then move forward and deliver the solutions. Whereas me and him were different. We have been at the centre of the... We asked for the working group to be set up that would examine how we go about these changes, and me and him have driven that from the centre. We didn't take a step back. We've been hands-on the whole way. Partially because we are obsessed with getting this right, because this is about saving people's life and changing people's lives. So it's important we get that right, and it's important it works. And also because we believe we're the best people around to go and do that. And we didn't just deliver the campaign, we delivered the solutions as well, which I think is an absolute key to being successful campaigners or advocates in whichever field. But we were too busy at that time, because we were at the meetings, we were trying to push our agenda. So I certainly don't think we will pat ourselves in the back until we see that data, because we're obsessed with data. We're data driven. All the work we do in schools, etc., we gather data from the young people, because up until now, myself and Jordan have never had a penny out of this. So I would rather be playing golf than speaking to 1,000 young people if I'm having no impact. So we gather this data, and until we see the data showing us that young LGBT people's school experiences and their lives have dramatically improved, then there's no time for platitudes, and there's no time to sit back patting ourselves in the back.
What will students actually do or experience as a result of this program?
Yeah, so LGBT inclusive education is basically, to some degree, it's become a little bit of a buzzword, whereby, you know, that most people in Scotland are aware that LGBT inclusive education is being implemented. We have always, you know, been very upfront about this is what this will look like. When we do work in schools with teachers and young people and with parents too, like we're always really clear, like, that this is what this encompasses. But a lot of people just kind of, I think because the actual, as Liam said, like the actual policy work that we've been involved in for the last 3 years now, that hasn't concluded yet. That concludes next year. So that we don't have like the resources and all of that aren't public yet. So there's sometimes a wee bit of confusion about, well, what does this actually mean? So LGBT inclusive education is basically the overarching policy term for the Scottish Government's policy approach that we work on them with. In terms of what that looks like, it's across the curriculum. So it does include teaching about LGBT history. So some of the key moments from the equal rights movement in Scotland, the rest of the United Kingdom, and also across the globe internationally. So, for example, teaching about the lesbians and gays support the minors in the UK, or the Stonewall Uprising, or the global push for marriage equality, and the you know, the different contexts and activist and campaigner efforts at the time within different areas of existing Scottish education content. So, for example, when young people are learning about pressure groups or campaign methods, then LGBT campaigns can be used as the example, as kind of how that might work in practice. It also means that, for example, in history lessons, that young people would learn about people like Alan Turing when schools are covering World War II. So they would go through the role of Alan Turing during World War II in terms of the kind of an innovation and the code breaking which helped the Allies win the war, but also how he was then treated by the state afterwards on the basis of his sexual orientation. And also to, so again, kind of in other areas of the curriculum, like English literature, if schools are teaching about poets like Carol Ann Duffy, or if they are talking about poets like Oscar Wilde, then also giving young people the context there. So, you know, it's difficult, for example, to understand The Importance of Being Earnest by Oscar Wilde if you don't have the context of what was happening to Oscar Wilde and his life. So in terms of, you know, just the very basic interpretation of texts, young people should be learning about the lives and the experiences of LGBT poets and writers and authors that may very well have fed into the text that they produced. From kind of earlier years within schools, it's as simple as, you know, taking principles of kindness, anti-bullying, you know, diversity being a strength, and different family types, you know, like two mums, two dads, single parents, LGBT family members. So it's very, it's the, you know, the good thing about the approach that we're taking in Scotland is that it's all very age and stage appropriate, and it wraps into wider principles. So, you know, part of LGBT inclusive education also is young people having an understanding of, you know, what is equality? What do we mean by equality? What do we mean by prejudice? What do we mean by discrimination? And, you know, how does this impact on LGBT communities? But how does this impact on other communities too? Ensuring that young people have an understanding of equalities law and legislation. So, for example, in the UK, we have the Equality Act, which consolidates different layers of equality law into one and outlaws discrimination on the basis of sexual orientation or gender reassignment. And a lot of young people aren't aware of that information. So when it comes to LGBT inclusive education, it's basically embedding LGBT themes into existing areas of the curriculum in order to, you know, try and destigmatize the culture of silence around LGBT issues, to try and shatter that within our schools. Yeah.
But there's just to add to that as well, though, you know, the approach we've taken is very, it's we've woven this completely throughout the every aspect of the schools in Scotland, or education in Scotland. For instance, school inspections, when school inspections take place, they now have to evidence what they're doing to enhance LGBT inclusion within the schools and what they're doing with regards to LGBT inclusive education, because these are two different things. LGBT inclusion within the school and LGBT inclusive education, these are two different things. But even one of the first things that we managed to get changed is there's a system in Scotland, I think it's called the CMIS, it's called, and it's the system where teachers can record and report bullying throughout schools, and it's a national thing. And one of the first things we done was to have homophobic bullying added to that, because teachers could list various different things, but they couldn't list homophobic bullying. And we had that changed. That was done about, or transphobic, of course. And that was done probably about 2 years ago, and that was done. But this is what the point I'm trying to make is, this approach is layered and it's multi-layered. And this is why we've completely woven it right through the fabric of our education here in Scotland. And that's one of the reasons that our approach is world leading, that and the fact that there are no opt-outs for faith schools, no opt-outs whatsoever. This is part of our education system now.
So have you had opposition from schools? Have you had principals and schools that have resisted or come out against this?
Not at this stage.
Not yet. And, you know, hopefully we wouldn't, but we've been doing this for 5 years now. We've worked with a lot of schools across Scotland. We've worked with, around 30,000 school pupils across the country. There's never been a single parental complaint that we're aware of about the work that's been done. Or the work that we've done with schools, there hasn't been teacher complaints. There's not, an organised movement against this in Scotland. There's, of course, online trolling and online abuse that we have to put up with, unfortunately, as an LGBT charity working with schools. But in terms of, opposition and resistance, it's not a phenomenon in Scotland. And I think the reason for that is because we didn't just make these proposals kind of willy-nilly and out the blue. We worked with teachers for the best part of 2 years. We worked with the Teachers Trade Union in Scotland. We worked with parents and the National Parent Forum of Scotland. And we, the proposals that we've put forward and the way that LGBT inclusive education will work in Scotland is really sensible. And it's difficult to argue that young people shouldn't learn about LGBT people from throughout society and from throughout history, that young people shouldn't learn about prejudice and bullying, that young people shouldn't understand the impact of homophobia, biphobia, transphobia, and how to recognise and identify that within school and within wider society and how to challenge it. It's difficult to argue those things. How do you say on the one hand, it's all right for young people to learn about Martin Luther King at school, it's all right for young people to learn about Emmeline Pankhurst at school, but we can't teach young people about Marsha P. Johnson or Alan Turing or Billie Jean King, just in case we make them LGBT? It's ridiculous. So our proposals, our approach to LGBT education in schools is very common sense, and it works. As Liam says, we've been collecting data for years about our work in schools, and we can evidence that after schools do implement LGBT themes into their curriculum at a local level, after they do work with us around bullying and homophobic language in schools, that there is a tangible change within the schools. We know that our own evidence shows us that young people who previously had negative opinions towards the LGBT community or towards LGBT peers in school, after going through a curriculum like this, after working after receiving, interventions and services which support LGBT education in schools, their perspectives and their opinions change, they're more understanding, they're more empathetic, and that's how we drive out bullying. As far as I'm concerned, the two major components to LGBT inclusive education is, one, it's an anti-bullying measure, it's a preventative bullying measure. We're not being reactive to bullying, we're being proactive. We're using education to try and weed out the prejudices and stigmas which cause homophobic and transphobic bullying. And two, we're empowering LGBT young people and ultimately all young people to really, receive that simple message that it's completely okay to be who you are, and being LGBT is not a barrier in life, because even though as LGBT adults we all know that, I think we can all remember what it's like to be a young person and think that our life is over because we're gay, and it's not good enough if we continue to have young people having those experiences.
There's also the aspect as well that Scotland is broadly progressive as well. When I was first doing this, and obviously it raised some eyebrows that a guy like me was involved in something like this and so very passionate about it. But what I generally found as well is that a lot of parents thought that kids would already be getting this in school, because we're living in the era of prominent LGBT figures on television, marriage equality, same-sex parents dropping kids at school gates. People were actually a little bit surprised that this was still something that happened, because I think that certainly I'm now 42, and I think people of my generation had thought that we'd moved beyond that and we'd got to the other side of it. And actually, like me, when you have the conversations, are absolutely horrified and disgusted about the experiences of young people. One of the main drivers of this organisation as well is the absolute abject disgust that I felt when that young man there told me about, what he thought his best options were at 12 years old. And obviously then you take that and you... you think you superimpose that onto your own child and ask the question, is that acceptable? Is that good enough for my child if she grows up as part of the LGBT community? And of course, the answer to that is no. So yeah, Scotland, I feel, is broadly progressive, and as much as there might be a small hardcore of people who hide behind things like faith and try and use that as a justification for objecting to us trying to make sure that every young person that goes through Scottish education has the same outcome, but these people will be swept away.
I think you know that in Australia we had the Safe Schools program, which was an anti-bullying, anti-homophobic program. But unfortunately, it became very politicized. And I think it's, Matt, you might know more, but this has been dropped in every other state apart from Victoria, I think,
that's
at the moment.
Correct, yeah.
Yeah. How did you keep the politics out of what you were doing, or did that never come up?
We engaged politically, so we took the arguments to legislators and we took the arguments to the Scottish Parliament, and you know, Ty was very much led on personal experiences and personal stories, so I and other LGBT young people spoke to decision makers and parliamentarians about the experiences that we had at school and what had to change, and Liam was very effective as someone who wasn't LGBT, but someone who was also a parent. So he was able to speak to a whole other audience of people and another audience of decision makers in the Parliament, and help them to understand why this was so important for all young people and ultimately for the fabric of our society. I think it's a real shame what happened in terms of Safe Schools. We met a few years ago with someone who runs a Safe Schools program in Victoria, and I think unfortunately very much got caught up in a moral panic and was kind of manipulated by reactionary forces, which is a risk everywhere just now in the world. You look at the narrative and discourse on trans rights just now in the UK, and in the last year or so, like just from a UK-wide level, particularly on social media, like that we have seen a lot more than previously. A lot of old school homophobia returning, I think that's just a kind of symptom of where we're at just now in terms of the culture. But we were quite fortunate in that, because we had built so much support across civil society, that we didn't really have that, any sort of political backlash or something else. But Liam, what were you going to?
Yeah, what I was going to say was that we managed to keep the politics out of it, and it was never allowed to become a political football. And that's because we went to build a broad consensus for this. Now, as he just said there, Civic Scotland got behind us, the National Parent Forum, after me and Jordan delivering a couple of table-thumping speeches, they voted to support us in the face of having religious representatives on their board. The Trade Union Congress in Scotland backed us. So we built such momentum that it was almost an unstoppable force, if you get me. And at one point, I can remember saying to Jordan that, we got to tipping point, and I says to him, well, that's it. It's done now. Me and you could get wiped out tomorrow, and this is still going to, the juggernaut's going to continue on. This, that we've now built something that's unstoppable. And what we've done with the political thing, we had in 2016 for the Scottish parliamentary elections, every party and that stood, other than UKIP, the right-wing, reactionary, racist, Brexiteer outfit, every party other than them had some form of commitment to backing what we were trying to deliver. So that was absolutely huge when you've got every party in that parliament then having elected representatives elected on a mandate which included delivery of LGBT inclusive education. So we again, it goes back to the pragmatism whereby myself and Jordan went and done all the groundwork and we covered all bases and we built that tsunami. And that's why we managed to keep it from being a political football. And also something we've done is we worked the parties. Of course, we worked the parties and we worked the system whereby we were meeting with everybody that we could get our hands on. We were having questions asked in the chamber from right across the chamber from all the different parties. And that's another thing that I think is really important. When you build that broad consensus, it makes it easier for the government to go and do something, because ultimately me and Jordan, it was actually Jordan's fabulous idea that we were going to have a pledge. And you know how you see politicians standing with the pledge signs and I support X, Y and Z? Well, we done that, but we upped the ante, because as part of the pledge, there was five commitments from the politicians, and one of these was legislation, new legislation if required. So once we got to a stage that we had a majority of politicians in that parliament, and ironically, we were inspired by the independence referendum, and we would like another one, and we'd like to get over the line the next time. But ironically, we then had a bigger majority for LGBT inclusive education than there is for another independence referendum in the parliament. But what we've done at that point was, obviously, the minute you then get you've got a majority of MSPs signing a pledge that talks about new legislation, it's checkmate, and the government need to do something, because we were then had free rein to go and drive forward with a private member's bill, and that would have embarrassed the government if we had to go to, let's say, the Conservatives, which we might have done, and delivered. We would have probably done that for the aesthetic, yeah. Jordan. We would have done that, because we've got a socially progressive government, so what we're going to do is, to embarrass you even further, we're going to bring in the Conservatives, and we're going to deliver this on the back of the Conservatives. So we managed to achieve all of that, and that's how we managed to make it not a political football. And all these people that we've got great relationships with know exactly where we and Jordan are politically, and they know exactly where we stand in a constitutional question, but none of that was ever a problem. We managed to circumnavigate that quite successfully.
Liam, you've kind of answered this, but I'd like to catch it as one grab if I can. So if you don't mind me saying, you two are a bit of an odd couple. I say that with respect. Liam, as a straight dad, why are you involved in this fight to change, to take forward progressive LGBT education?
Well, the short answer is that I'm a progressive person. I believe in a better world. I believe the world, something I speak about in schools, and I talk to the young people, and I challenge the young people to be a better them. And something I say to these young people is that none of us can be held accountable for the world that we find when we get here as we grow on, we age. The world is as we find it. But every single one of us will be held accountable and are absolutely responsible for the world we leave behind. And it's my commitment to the world that once I'm gone and dust, that this place should be better for me being here. And it should be better for every young person that goes through our education system. That's the short answer. But the long answer probably is that his story actually broke my heart. It broke my heart, because what I seen back in 2015 when I first met him, he had the world at his feet as far as I could see. But at 12 years of age, he had chosen a tree that he was going to finish his life on, just because of who he fancies, just because of who he's attracted to, just because he's a young gay man. And that moved me to tears when he told me about that. That's just a cruel, evil world when people feel like that. I realised that I had to do something. And what I also realised was that people like me were part of the problem. I was part of the problem. I was the West of Scotland heterosexual lorry driver who would refer to people as faggots and poofs, and on the football park, on the road, in the street. That was the culture. That was a common language. I used it. And I realised that, if I'm part of the reason that boy wanted to not be here at 12 years of age, I was part of the problem. Therefore, I am, by default, part of the solution. I have to change, but I have to take other people with me, and I have to change as many people as possible. And that's pretty much where I came from, and that's pretty much where I'm still at, and probably going to be at until as long as I'm drawing breath, to be quite honest.
For Melissa as well?
Of course, for Melissa, my little girl, for her future has to be better. Now, she tells me that she's not going to be gay because she fancies all the boys. Now, that's a problem. But I had to make sure that the household that she is born into and that lives, grows up and is shaped in, had to be inclusive. It had to have different types of language. And I'll give you a small example. I can remember a number of years ago that Melissa had broke wind in the living room, and I'd say to her, "How are you going to get a husband or a wife doing things like that?" And he started laughing. He's like, "You see what you just did there?" And I realised that, and see that tiny act, that's almost revolutionary, because at 3-4 years of age, my wee girl knows that I understand that she might have a wife one day. As far as I'm concerned, that's me making sure there's no closet for her to go in, because her dad's using that kind of language as he brings his child up. So it's about that kind of thing. It's about making sure that everybody's free and able to be themselves. And you know what? There's a lot of hate in the world. A lot of hate in the world, and it's about time that people like me understood their role in that and went about, delivering or spreading a bit of love and acceptance.
What does the future hold for the campaign and for you two? I mean, are you looking at possibly taking the campaign to the UK, getting the inclusive education into the UK, the rest of the UK, I should say?
We would be happy to take Ty anywhere. We would come to Australia if you guys have got the money for the flights. But it's difficult. We're currently in a situation at the moment whereby for the last 2 years we've been building the infrastructure to make Ty a full-time organisation, because our in-school interventions, as some folk call them, are proven to be very successful. So we're in the process. And actually, we're supposed to hear back within the next week from the Scottish Government about funding that will allow us to formulate the charity into, you know, a full-time delivery body and employ people to get in schools and do this work. So that's where we're at the moment. With regards to, we go everywhere and anywhere. We've been to Ireland, we're regularly in London, we've been to America. And yeah, we would, if we had the wherewithal and the means, we would be able to, we want to take this anywhere and encourage people. As he said, we've spoken to people from Victoria previously who were trying to figure out how they could go about you know, the kind of joined up approach that we've got in Scotland and Australia. So this is a worldwide issue. You know, it doesn't matter who you speak to from which part of the world, the experiences of young people coming to terms with, unfortunately having to come to terms with who they are, is universal. It's not, you know, a Scottish or a British or an Australian specific thing. And we have been quietly agitating, you know, with people in other parts of the United Kingdom. For instance, I've had a big conversation with someone in Wales who might try and go and do the same thing with the devolved government in Wales. But what we kind of think about Ty is, you know, we built a model there, a campaigning model. We built a model of, you know, the framework that's going to be used in schools. And this is interchangeable and it can be used anywhere in the world. So we kind of think that Ty, we would rather Ty inspired people in other parts of the world to go and take that model to and go and try and deliver the same thing there, rather than me and Jordan becoming globetrotting activists. Because I think that, you know, individual people in different places are the people who best understand those communities, those schools, and the people who should be taking it forward, not me and not him. I think that that's our dream, you know. We believe, Ty, the organic nature of it, the way we went about our business, we would love to see other people in other parts of the world going and maybe being inspired by that and delivering on it as well.
Yeah, following that blueprint, ultimately, and I think that's the kind of... The key message, I guess, for anyone that's listening, as Liam says there, when it comes to, you know, homophobic bullying, transphobic bullying, when it comes to LGBT young people feeling excluded and overlooked or isolated or lonely or broken at school, that's not something that only affects LGBT kids in Scotland. That is a universal problem. That's a global issue. You know, homophobia is a global issue. And if we are able to get it right here in Scotland in terms of, you know, using inclusive education to try and address societal homophobia and transphobia and improve those young people's experiences, then follow that blueprint and that model. And, you know, if a then 36-year-old petrol tanker driver and a 19-year-old university student that worked part-time in a supermarket can go from a conversation on a sofa to world-leading government policy and really revolutionising, you know, young people's experiences here, you know, anyone can do it. You don't have to be a paid lobbyist. You don't have to know how to campaign. You don't have to have experience here. We, you know, had never written a policy in our lives, and within 3 years we were very much carrying and leading on, you know, global leading policy. So if we can do it, anyone can. And I think ultimately the only barrier to LGBT people, but anyone in any part of the world, you know, actually going and making a change like this as the thought that they won't be able to. And I would hope that, you know, if anyone ever wanted to learn more about the story of Ty, we've got podcasts on our website, but I would hope that, you know, similar to Liam, that if anyone takes anything from Ty, it's that ordinary people really can make a change and make a difference. You just need a little bit of passion to go and do it.
But also, just to caveat that, you know, we are very accessible and we're very easy to get, and we're always happy to consult and to kind of help push people in the right direction. And we never look for anything. We never look for money or anything. So if anyone in Australia wants to get in touch with us, they're more than welcome to do so, and we're more than happy to help. No, we won't stop. We won't stop. We've been threatening that we're going to fold the charity if we don't get the government funding. But there's been too much time and too much effort put into just allowing this thing to collapse. Because, as I say, when I say we've built a juggernaut over here, we really have. And you know, it's difficult because me and Jordan, are, as you say, we are absolutely an odd couple. I'm obviously far too good-looking to be hanging about with him. but we really have. But we're, that odd couple is what's made it work because we're very different. We've got the same ambitions and the same goal in sight, but we're very different. We have different approaches towards doing it, and I think that's what's made us very successful and very effective. Yeah. So yeah, that's
and we speak to different audiences of people as well, like, you know, to, whether rightly or wrongly, to a very large extent, you know, Liam is able to, you know, speak to the audience of people or the parts of society that, you know, that may be, for example, like concerned parents. And, you know, Liam's able to say, well, I'm a parent too. Like, this is how this works. This is why this is important for our children. And he's also able to speak to that kind of, you know, that, like, G.I. Joe toxic masculinity figure that you know, so, when it comes to school bullying and things like that is often the you know, the kind of conditions that enables that type of bullying. Like the people that bullied me at school were all the young guys that kind of walked around with a swagger and you know, were very much performing over masculinity, and Liam's able to kind of address this with them in a way that I can't.
We do workshops. We do workshops and all that kind of thing as well. See, this is the other aspect of what we do as broad, because I understand that the reason I used all that language was me trying to be the big man and trying to show how masculine and dominant I was. So we do workshops with young boys, and we talk about these issues, because these issues then lead into homophobic behaviour, sexist behaviour, but it also, I believe, leads and spirals into mental health issues for men. And of course we've got you know, an epidemic. I don't know what it's like in Australia, but there's an epidemic over here of men taking their lives, particularly around my age group. So it's interesting because the LGBT thing is at the centre of it, but it kind of spirals out, and there's different other aspects that we try and pick up on. And it's interesting because sometimes I think that we're half our heads, because we're actually going in different directions trying to save the world. And one of these days we're going to either burn out, or we are going to save the world. So who knows what comes from.
Absolutely. The odd couple changing the world. Jordan Daly, Liam Stevenson, co-founders of Time for Inclusive Education, speaking to us from Scotland. Thank you so much for speaking with us and inspiring us here on World Wide Wave.
But thank you very much. It was very kind to get in touch.
Take care.
Thanks for listening to another podcast from World Wide Wave, the show that takes you around the globe, one country at a time. World Wide Wave is the international news and current affairs show on Australia's LGBT radio station, Joy 94.9. You can listen live every Tuesday night from 7 p.m. Eastern Australian Time on 94.9 FM in Melbourne and online at joy.org.au. You'll find all our podcasts at joy.org.au/worldwidewave, or follow us on Facebook for the latest international LGBT news. Search W3 Joy on Facebook now.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.